Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 15th of March. Would that be the Ides of March? I guess it would be. A small Julius Caesar reference there from Shakespeare. But how did we close last week? Well, we did manage to scratch to a new all-time high in the S&P 500, as we've noted in the divergence across the market. The big tech names has kind of popped back a little bit, but they've far below where the S&P is in relative terms to the previous high. So we have the NASDAQ 100. Look at your charts. That 21-day moving average there is quite important on the NASDAQ 100. But for our intents and purposes, we have on slide two the S&P Cash Index. I put up the cash here for a while just because I think it's relevant, because it shows that this is a new high relative to the previous one, whereas the futures have all the pricing and dividends bits. That means that this high is not as prominent. And then you notice on the MACD that we're still way below momentum-wise where we were before, which means you really need to keep trucking higher here to get that momentum picture from looking more healthy. And of course, a very interesting week, as we discussed last week in our rather dramatic podcast title. Huge week ahead with the FOMC on Wednesday, with these U.S. yields pressing at the highs of the cycle. And even around the world, we've got the Bank of Japan coming in on Friday with their results of their policy review. So we have equity sort of in a mixed mood overnight, Peter, and we've got stimulus checks hitting the street. What's not to fear? Bitcoin new highs over the weekend, hip hip hooray, or are you a bit cautious here?
Well, I think it is a big week ahead of us, with a lot of central banks coming out, could shake the markets. We have the U.S. 10-year yield at 1.63 the last time I checked, so pretty bit this morning, and we know clearly from the last couple of weeks' price action that the interest rate sensitivity is kicking and is alive in markets. And we have the NASDAQ 100 down 0.3% on the futures versus S&P 500 unchanged. And I think this is going to be a theme that will stay with us for a while, where the technology stocks will take the backseat as interest rates move higher, and it will be a different part of the market that will pull, if it can, pull this market higher. And as we've talked about, I mean, some of the big, really strong performing parts of the market, e-commerce stocks and technology stocks, they will begin to face headwinds as we open up the economies during the summer months, and especially in the second half of the year. And then this week as well, you said it as yourself, John, we have the stimulus checks. I guess some Americans have already arrived. I've already got them, over the weekend. And we have all these surveys from Deutsche Bank and others that suggest that a lot of people below 45 will take the majority of their stimulus checks and plow them into the market. So there will be a tug of war, I think, between rising interest rates and fresh money arriving at a lot of new retail investors.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, Peter, you also got to look ahead at the next step, because as we'll endlessly remind folks, that financial markets operate on expectations as much as the current news items. Sometimes you get the classic buy the rumor, sell the fact type of reaction, or vice versa, depending on what the setup is. And the next round is going to be maybe not necessarily a stimulus, although it quite possibly could be on the infrastructure side, but on potential tax program to pay for some of this, especially looking at, say, more progressive tax structure. We'll definitely have to look into that in future podcasts. As that begins to circulate around, it's something that Biden would likely like to get done before those 2022 midterms late next year. And you mentioned the yields. So I have on slide three a few moving parts here to consider. Also ahead of the FOMC meeting, we have that 10-year Treasury yield, where we can effectively see we've seen a full reset of yields to the prior, pre-COVID outbreak last year. 162 basis points. Of course, we're operating at a much heavier debt load, so that interest rate is a bit more meaningful as it creeps higher. And I guess one of the key things the Fed has to put to rest is whether the market pricing of rate hikes starting already perhaps around early to mid 2023. You see that little chart inset top right? That's the March 2023 Eurodollar short-term interest rate future. Pricing at about a hike and a half, if you will, and by sort of mid-year, it is a three-month future after all, and the dot plot from the December FOMC meeting, and because this is a quarterly meeting where they're updating the dot plot, it's quite influential, and they'll need to update their forecast. So the previous one showing just a handful of Fed members predicting that there would be liftoff in 2023. So very interesting stuff heading into that meeting. Ola, the interest rate market as well and the dollar, so critical for gold. And you've really picked up on quite a strong divergence relative to what was almost like a slavish correlation recently in gold. So take us through your impressions on what happened there late Friday and into this morning.
Absolutely, John. And as you can see on slide 8, we've had this, I'll just take the last week and a bit, where we've seen this very, very tight correlation with real yields inverted and gold. What was interesting on Friday when we saw nominal yields rise to a new cycle high, we actually saw saw gold start to move higher, even though real yields were moving higher as well. I think part of that story is you can see on the right hand side then U.S. break-even yields, because we hit a new, I would say, almost multi-year highs in all the both 5, 10s and 30 years. So so the inflation focus is most certainly still there, and it's combined with the fact that we managed to find some support below that 1700 area now, which is a key area, just attracted some buying into the weekend. But obviously we are not out of the woods yet. Probably need to break all the way back above 1765 in order to attract some renewed momentum. And you can see in terms of positioning, it's very weak right now. I just put in the table from my weekly cut updates. You can find that on analysis.saxo. Last week, the net gold length held by money managers dropped to a near 2-year low and is now down 85% from the highs we saw in March last year. So obviously, they're just a reflection of a market which has lost momentum, which is in a downtrend, but obviously also one, if you do see a change in direction, there could be quite a lot of pent-up buying coming back into the market.
All right. And we mentioned last week a really great chart from Altea, our fixed income strategist, on showing sort of the dynamics in the U.S. Yields and how it's, it should be tracking pretty good foreign interest when you have euro-hedged U.S. yields beating what you get, for example, in Greek treasuries by on the order of, I think it was 75 basis points. And you can see on slide 5, as we talk about those rising yields and how it's dragged dollar-yen higher, dollar yen nearing a major inflection point, 110. As you can see, the big channel there, and 110, the flat line, has been a really critical level as well. And we're heading into the end of the Japanese financial year at the end of this month. A couple of times, a handful of times historically, there's been some pretty big pivots in the price action for dollar yen around that financial year end because of hedging activity, et cetera. But you see on the left that the U.S. 7 to 10 year treasury yield hedged in Japanese yen is now turned positive. So on the margin, at least, should be attractive for foreign bidders, which we've not so far seen in this market. And then I'll round out the FX picture with overnight a big move, and I'll get back to you in a second on iron ore prices, which have pressured Aussie to quite a degree overnight. You can see Aussie Kiwi on the left in slide 6. And this is the biggest export for Australia. Interesting when you have a country that has such a heavy mix of these sort of very CO2 emitting industries, iron ore, coking coal, etc. The Chinese city of Tangshan is going to curb output significantly, and this hit the price of iron ore futures in China, and we saw Aussie divergently weak overnight. Small side note on Kiwi, and I tweeted out an article earlier at John J. Hardy on New Zealand's plan to use housing prices as the RBNZ's third mandate. That's, of course, an FT article with a paywall, but it's very interesting, and I'll follow up on that one as well, because you have a prime minister that's promised low housing prices, and it's an embarrassment to see them advancing 19% year-on-year, of course, driven by low interest rates. Then the FX trend and volatility chart. You can see how yen is really suffering, and the Canadian dollar is at the top of the heap on the combination of its association with a stronger U.S. economy and stimulus and rising oil prices. But any other thoughts, Ola, on iron ore before we get back to Peter?
Well, only the, as I put in on slide 8 here, you can see, slide 7, sorry, you can see the slide that we've seen so far, and it's obviously not a major move. We just come down from close to $180 a ton, which is a I believe it was close to a record high. And but it's going to be interesting to follow, because if China goes through with its commitment to cut steel production, you can see on that insert from Bloomberg that last year Chinese steel production accounted for 56% of total global output, and it is obviously a massive polluting process, and they want to cut it back. And if that's the case, then we may end up with an iron ore surplus, which in the case of Australia could be having somewhat of a dampening impact on the currency. So so interesting to note that China has had a very, very strong economic activity in January and February. We also saw that in the numbers overnight. But it's also quite clear that this growth is driven by exports, not so much by domestic consumption. And I suppose that is could potentially be somewhat of a worry for going forward here.
All right. And the other big focus, of course, as we open up the economies and get these vaccinations rolled out, which has been slowed a bit in parts of the EU because the AstraZeneca vaccine is up for review in a spreading, widening number of countries. I know the vaccine numbers have slowed considerably here in Denmark in recent days, as they were one of the first, or if not the first, to suspend the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine. But travel stocks still heating up. Quite interesting, Peter. You are launching that travel stock a basket, I suppose it's called, of course. And what are your thoughts on travel here, which has gone nearly vertical in recent weeks?
Yeah, so it was we actually flagged it on Friday that we wanted to launch there for the astute reader. We did not, and it's because of the Bloomberg's calculation engine didn't get to finish its job. But we are now ready to launch it, and we will do it today. It's interesting, while we're talking here, on the Bloomberg terminal, and news just hit the the headline came in that the European Travel and Leisure Index now have surpassed its February peak. As you can see here on slide four, I mean, our basket did that already a week ago. So there is a correlation there to that index. But I think that two things. So first of all, we have 40 stocks in this basket. I think it's a pretty interesting one because there are really some bad ETFs and no real good indices that actually creates a well broad diversified travel basket. So I think you will enjoy this one. What you can see as well on this slide is in the small insert that it's actually the best performing theme among the ones that we are tracking. It has done even better than the commodities sector. And as you said, John, I mean, it's gone almost vertical. You have some of these names out there trading at, you know, valuation multiples that are quite aggressive on a 2-year forward basis, because, you know, in the next 12 months, yeah, you can rip that out of the calendar in a way. I mean, it's a rebound year, but it won't be anything spectacular. A lot of these names have also increased their debt a lot. So I'm probably in the position where I think that maybe investors have been chasing this reopening narrative blindly without looking too much at the valuations, and I actually think we'll have a pretty hard stop. I could be wrong. And where I could be wrong is that maybe the pricing power will surprise many people, that the demand for traveling is so big that, you know, airliners and hotels can actually set prices in a wild way they haven't had been able to do for many years. That could be the potential joker here. So we'll monitor this, because I think it will be a very good parameter on the reopening and pricing power of within the travel segment.
And then interesting as well, if you're looking at the case of Italy, where they've had such a rising case count recently that they've had to introduce new shutdowns and curfews. I mean, you're getting kind of late in the season. You know, tourist season starts in earnest in June. I mean, at least a partial write down of some of the early parts of this tourist season is in wait. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, but John, and we have to probably mention that. I mean, last week, so European equities were very big, but it came at the same time with AstraZeneca news really hitting the wire in a very bad way, right? We had Denmark and 6-7 other countries pulling or suspending vaccinations because of potential links between the AstraZeneca vaccine and blood clots. And you have Netherlands now also suspending their vaccination program this morning, based on the evidence that they have found from these other countries. AstraZeneca is vividly defending their vaccine, but never the case, there will be a huge communication exercise now in getting this vaccine back into the program in an efficient way. And it that will postpone the rollout for Europe, because Europe has been very, very slow and not been very aggressive on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which also delayed. And we basically based our whole program on the AstraZeneca, or at least being one of the main pillars.
Yeah, and what I don't get is just how the UK managed to administer millions of shots without this issue coming up. Let's put that one aside. We'll see how that issue develops. Clearly, it could provide a boost if it's cleared up in coming days. But then you've got earnings. You've got a new earnings new week, new earnings calendar. A few very interesting names, especially Volkswagen tomorrow.
Yeah, I've mentioned in red or marked in red the ones that we should really follow. And Volkswagen, I think, is the highlight of the week, given on Friday we highlighted this Tesla versus Volkswagen, with Volkswagen being extremely successful here in the short term in Europe, gaining a lot of market share in electric vehicles. The new CEO is much more outgoing and public. They will have a battery day as the same day with the announcement of these earnings on Tuesday, so tomorrow. And we just know that Volkswagen have the financial muscle, but it's specifically the production muscles to really be a fierce competitor to Tesla. So we'll watch that one. Zalando important as well for the e-commerce here in Europe. Lennar in Europe, in the US on the housing rebound there. I think it's quite interesting to track. Pinduoduo was postponed. We did mention it last week. They postponed it in the last minute. They are out on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we have Nike on the US consumer rebound story there. And then we have the FedEx as well on Thursday, which is just such key thing to track on their outlook because of those rising logistics costs and potential hit to operating margins the next 12 months.
Okay, and if we look at the macro calendar, let's have a look there on yours. We're on slide 9, by the way, Peter. The earnings calendar there, and slide 10 has the macro stuff. So let's tune into this. This is an interesting calendar this week. Of course, the FOMC meeting Wednesday, and then just prior to that, Tuesday, late Tuesday, we have a U.S. 20-year Treasury auction. Interesting there, and then several of the emerging market central banks meeting. And Norway and Bank of England as well. Those are on Thursday. And of course, that Bank of Japan meeting and policy review Friday. If we have yields really pressuring significantly higher, I think could see a lot of fireworks on Friday with that in dollar yen. So that'll be especially interesting there. So strap yourselves in for an interesting week. Let's stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.